Welcome to Screw the Clout. I'm your host, Steve Stanulis. Each week, we're going to have amazing guests share their stories of saying, screw it. Tune in each week. This is Screw the Clout. Welcome to Screw the Clout. I have a dear friend on tonight, who I know for more years than I want to even say right now. But I want to welcome my dear friend, John Bianco, to the Screw the Clout podcast. I was super excited to have you. And John, what's going on?
Listen, it's a pleasure being here. It's always a pleasure to work with you. We have worked together on numerous occasions over the many, many years that we know each other. I also won't elaborate on the amount of years. It just kind of dates us and ages us. But that's another conversation for another day.
Absolutely. And maybe we'll go down a little of that road later on as we speak. But yeah, so John, as we discussed earlier, a little off the air. I mean, this is more of how people kind of had a screw it moment and kind of got where they were by just letting things go and just, screw it, fuck it, let the chips fall. And you've had an amazing acting career. The one we want to focus on today for all listeners is obviously The Sopranos.
Yes.
So, one of the most iconic shows of all time. You actually have one of the most iconic killing scenes where you get killed.
Yes.
But let's go through that whole process from when you auditioned to when you first did the first table read to the cast members and so on and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. First, I'd like to say, as you were asking about a great moment of what spun my life into the acting world, basically. I was a stockbroker on Wall Street for 5 years. And even as a kid, I always wanted to be a filmmaker and an actor, more an actor, not really a filmmaker, but I wanted to be an actor. I never really thought that was a realistic goal, and that's not something that your parents push you towards. So real quickly, in a nutshell, after the market collapsed way back in 1987, I stuck it out a little longer. And that, for me, was a moment to say, you know what, let me switch gears and let me go after my dreams. So I really can, find out if, this is for me. And what I want to do. And, I say to everybody, you really should follow your dreams. I was fortunate enough to be able to afford that because, as you know, too, it's a very expensive road to go down without having some sort of a steady job. So I dove in. And what I did to fill the time, obviously, was I looked into the whole, how am I going to make money while I could still go on auditions and not have a regular job? And that's actually how we met through the whole Chippendale world.
Right.
So that afforded me the luxury to then, go full force with my dreams.
Even that had to be a scary moment because obviously you're working on Wall Street, you're making some good money. I mean, obviously, in 1987, when the shit hit the fan, a lot of things changed, but you had to be used to making some more than, the average person's type of coin, and in the safe pocket, I believe in all that.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to be an actor, which is like the most, unemployed type of business. It's either you're working, you're here, or you're scraping. So you left a pretty stable thing.
Yeah, it's feast or famine. But with the stockbroker thing as well. I mean, we were on a draw. So with that, too, it's really commission based. So only in the beginning, you're on a salary. And then very shortly after that, they just cut all of that out because they want you to just earn. And yes, we were making big money. And if you've seen the movie Wall Street or Boiler Room, that was closer to Boiler Room was my world of, how we operated, which I also... It was weighing on me too. We knew that we weren't really doing the right thing by the people that were investing with us. And I just, when everything collapsed, like I said, you know, I pretty much lost all my business. So that it was at that point I lost, you know, I was driving a brand new Mercedes at the time. I had two condos in the city and I lost everything. And I just basically started from scratch and was driving car service, making $60 a day, you know, living at home. And that's when I, you know, went into, you know, full force with the acting. And then eventually I, you know, started doing the dancing thing, which again, afforded me the luxury to, you know, be able to go on auditions and whatnot. So that's how that whole thing, you know, escalated. But as you, you know, as you mentioned too, you know, the acting world, anything with the arts is feast or famine. So, you know, you could be working, you know, 2 or 3 months straight, and then you may not be working for the next 4 or 5 months, 6 months or whatever. So, and with that, you know, I would try to balance out with going on and off unemployment and anything to facilitate my my dreams and to further my career. So you have to be really diligent and aggressive in the manner in which you, you know, try to get onto the next project and, you know, finding an agent. It was a lot different back then. We mailed out headshots and, you know, so it was a whole different world of how we operated. You know, finally got my first TV episode on Law and Order, and I think that was in 2001. And then things started, you know, coming together a little at a time. And at the time, my manager, you know, was submitting me on these projects, and there was this little show called The Sopranos, and you know, every Italian guy, I want to say in the world, but at least in the United States,
at least in the tri-state area.
He wanted to get on that show. I mean, all over the country, really.
No doubt, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, even if you weren't Italian, you wanted to get on that show, but especially the Italian guys, because now this is our niche, and you're like, okay, you know, I'm from Brooklyn, so, you know, living around mobsters is like I grew up with these people, so I know exactly how they think, you know, how they operate. So that's definitely in my back pocket, so I felt that I could bring something in the reality world to the table with that. So as most guys did, probably most Italian actors felt that they could bring something to the table. But, you know, it's like a baseball team. There's only a certain amount of people that they're going to put on the show. I got submitted on so many different small characters, you know, on so many different characters I got submitted for. And over probably a 4-year period, I would have to say I auditioned for about 4 years. I did get callbacks. Now, the casting agent, I'm sure you know, was Georgiana Walken, because you had to go through that as well.
Right.
Who was actually Christopher Walken's wife. She was pretty crazy, and she was very tough to get by.
Yes.
Everybody would be nervous just going into that office. So after several times of being into that office, and then when she set me up with the callback, which was now to get to the next level, you had to go to Silver Cup Studios, you know, in Long Island City. And you were now in front of the inquiry of David Chase, Terrence Winter, all the writers, producers. And now you're sitting there and it's like the firing squad. You got about 10 people that are, you know, looking at you. And it's one of the most intimidating audition processes that I've ever experienced. And I'm sure you could echo those sentiments exactly too. And so many people tell me that.
Well, I actually saw you there. I saw you today. I had to go through, sit through that when I went for a much smaller role.
That's
but yeah,
right.
I had you already there, and I actually saw you. And I was going into that firing squad, but yes.
That was funny. I remember that day. I was all suited up in my zoot suit, and I see you walking out of the building. I'm like, oh man, you know, I'm like, you're up here reading something, and you're like, oh shit, you know. We were just walking down the street, and I was going to Crafty or something.
This is a question I never even asked you. You know, was that the best role you ever went for? Was that the biggest role you ever auditioned for, Jerry Terciano? Or was it, if you could have gotten any of the roles you were on hold for or auditioned for, was that the one? Or was there other ones you might have wished you would have had? Or was that kind of the one you wanted?
So I'll tell you this. I'm looking at it real fast. No, if there was one other role that I wanted that I didn't get, and it was down to me and the other guy, it was the part of Little Carmine.
Who was it playing Little Carmine?
Ray Abruzzo.
Okay.
Right? I read for that. She actually told me that it was, and usually they don't do this. She's like, listen, it's down to you and one other guy. And I was like, come on. And I really wanted that because that was a really good role. And when I didn't get it, the next time I went up for the audition, I think I mentioned to Georgiana, I said, I got to ask, I said, you know, who got that role and why did they pick him over me? You know? So she was like, listen, it's this guy, Ray Abruzzo. He's a little older than you and a little more weathered looking. It was just that they, it was just like a different type of, slightly different type of look,
right.
You know, with that, I was like, okay, you know, but I was still disappointed, obviously. And then, so that's the only other role that I read for that I would have loved to have instead of my role.
Right.
Now, when I read for Lou Martini, the part that Lou Martini got was with the guy with the glasses. I don't remember the character's name, but that's what I got the call back for. And Lou Martini read for Jerry Torchiano. So it was like reverse.
Yeah, it's funny because, again, knowing Lou as well, and I can't picture Lou as Jerry Torchiano, and I can't picture you in the role now that Lou played, because
with the guy with the going in the glass
place. Exactly, right.
And I think, yeah, so I think that that they actually seen that as well. And so when I went to the callback for that role, I felt pretty good about what I did. And I got in my car and I'm driving on the BQE back home to Brooklyn. And my phone rings. It was not even 30 minutes after I walked out of it. And my manager was like, guess what? I'm like, what? She's like, you got the part.
And I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah, I was like, you know, that's like the best news in acting.
Of course.
You got the part. And I was like, oh, you know, because again, I was reading for the show for like 4 seasons, you know, and I actually told her I was tired of going up there because I almost felt like they were abusing me. I was like, you know, I don't understand. Like, what am I doing something wrong? Why do they just keep calling me up to the, for the callback and, you know, what's going on? And she's like, John, you know, listen, if they keep calling, just keep going. But anyway, she's like, you got this. And she goes, but I was like, what? She goes, but you got the part of Jerry Torchiano. And I was like, okay, let me look at that character, because I didn't even look at that character, you know?
Right.
When I got home, they sent me that episode for that, and I read through it, and it said the description of Jerry Torchiano was this California mob surfer type guy with blonde, wavy hair. And I'm like, that's what they want me for? So,
right. What is it like now? You go to Silver Cup for the first time. You do the table reads. You see James. You see Edie Falco. You see, Sirico. You see Imperioli. You see everybody. You know, they do the thing there with David Chase. Everybody stands up from James Gandolfini on down and who they are and what they're reading for. What's that experience like?
Oh, my God. So it's a very surreal moment because now I am in the room with, like, the heavyweights. I am Frank Vincent's right-hand man. I'm sitting right next to Frank Vincent, who is also an icon, every Scorsese movie,
right. And,
you know, Billy Batson. I mean, come on, Casino. The list goes on and on. So I'm sitting right next to Frank, and he's looking at me. So I walk in, and I actually, the funny thing was, is I had to go to the, I had to, before that, I had to go to the restroom. So I go to the restroom, and who's standing right next to me is Gandolfini.
That's funny.
So you know, I'm looking at him, and he's looking at me, and he's like, welcome aboard, you know, He goes, I shake your hand, but, you know, I'm indisposed right now. And I said,
that's great.
The feeling's mutual, you know? And then we, you know, kind of washed our hands together and then we shook in the bathroom. And he's like,
that's funny.
Have you on? And listen, the guy's an icon, you know, great guy. Cannot say enough nice things about James, who liked us to call him Jimmy, by the way. That was just mind blowing. That was absolutely mind blowing. That whole moment right there in the bathroom. And he really made me feel welcome right from that point. So that kind of settled my nerves. And then when we went back into the table read room, we all took our seats. You know, like I said, I was sitting next to Frank, we're all around the table. And, you know, David's like, okay, I just want everybody to say their name and the characters that they're playing. And I was just like really like absorbing that moment, you know, as, you know, David Chase is saying, you have creative Sopranos, he's directing this and that, and, you know, James Gandolfini, you know, and they're all going down the line. And, you know, and I'm like, I'm just really being conscious of when they get, you know, I want to be on point when they get to me. I don't want to just be like starstruck and be like, you know, so who are you? You know, so Frank Vincent. John Bianco playing Jerry Torciano. When I got those words out and then it was on to the next person who was to my right, who I don't remember who was sitting there at the top of my head, but I just was like, I'm here. I am here. I am on this show. One of the greatest shows, if not the greatest show to ever be on TV. And it was just like an incredible pinch me am I dreaming moment. And don't forget, this was also that first season that we shot, which was season 6, part 1. And I was also in season 6, part 2. That was the first season back from the 2-year hiatus that they were on.
Right.
So they were off for 2 years. And now we had all of that, you know, building up. It's just like, you know, I'm in the first episode, I believe it was, of that season. So the hype was so incredible, Steve, that it just, it was mind-blowing. So sitting there, and then, you know, once we're, you know, we start reading, going around the room and talking, you know, saying our lines and stuff, it was still right to the very end. It was such a moment that I just, you know, felt, it was like an out-of-body experience, so to speak, you know.
I mean, that's what you, everything you dreamed and worked for and hoped to be, you were doing it. It was there.
Right there in that moment. And I also went over to Terrence Winter and I said, Terrence, like, I have to ask you this question. He's like, what is it, John? I'm like, I really didn't want to come back up and read anymore for you guys. He's like, what are you talking about? I said, because I almost felt like I was being abused. Like I was up here 10 times over a 4-year period for callbacks. And I said, I just didn't think you wanted, you know, I just didn't think you liked what I was doing. He said, I'm going to just say this. He goes, what I'm going to say is, he's like, we did like you, or number one, we would not have kept calling you back. That's number one. And number two, it was just a question of what we wanted to put you in. We knew we wanted to work with you. It was just a question of where we were going to place you. And that, as an actor, also, when you hear something like that,
reassurance
from, like, this is the top of the food chain. Right. When you're hearing that from guys like that,
right,
just makes, it's like all the work you did and the schooling that I've gone through and, you know, working on my craft, it all, like, made sense in that moment, which you don't get too many of those moments as an actor.
I had the pleasure of doing a sort of under 5 role, and so I can relate, but not on your level, obviously, yeah. But I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Between take, between sets, between setups, who is the person that you would hang out with the most or you had the biggest rapport with in the cast?
So, because I worked with Frank Vincent so much, I kind of, you know, sat with him a lot and talked to Frank a lot. So we probably, you know, ate lunch together and stuff like that. But Frank could be, you know, sometimes he could be a little standoffish, but he was cool with me. And I was, you know, I was mostly hanging around with him. Now, the guy that made me laugh the most and was the most humble, believe it or not, was Stevie Van Zandt.
I knew you were going to say that. I've already met him once, but I just had a feeling you were going to go with him.
Yeah, he just, we did the scene in the Costco, okay? And I remember we had to be there like, 5 o'clock in the morning, some ungodly hour, And I was like, and I'm a late guy, so I was like, maybe I shouldn't go to sleep. I should just probably go straight to set. It was in New Jersey. Obviously, they wanted to start shooting before they opened the store. I think we had, about 5 hours or so. They were holding off to like 10 a.m. And we're walking through, I had my blonde hair and all of that. And I'll tell you how that whole thing got rolling in a second. But we're strolling down, and I didn't really have any dialogue in that scene. So he's looking at me because, it's really Frank and Tone and Gandolfini walking, and we're kind of trailing them, watching them and stuff. And he's just kind of looking at me with that face, and he would always make me laugh. So I kept looking at him, and I'm like, just don't crack me up. I said, Stevie, I do laugh at a lot of things, and I don't want to start doing that right here. So he's looking at me with that face and doing all of these things. And I'm like, oh my God, this guy's fucking killing me, So there was a part where this lady is trying to reach these Pampers. And it was, I don't know why they cut this out, because it was hysterical, Steve. So there's the four of us, Tony, Gandolfini and Frank, having a conversation, and me and Silvio just hanging out like this. And she's trying to reach these Pampers, and she kind of looks at us, and Stevie looks at me. He's like, "Why don't you go help her out?" And so I walk over to her, and I'm like, "Do you need a hand?" And she's like, "Could you get those Pampers up on the top shelf? I can't quite reach those, So I look back at the guys; they're looking at me. They shrug their shoulders, and I reach up and I give it to her. And she's like, "Thank you very much." And then she kind of looks at us like, these guys look like they're out of place in this store right now,
Oh, it wasn't part of the scene?
It was part of the scene.
Oh, okay.
They cut it out. So it was such a great moment in the scene.
Right.
She was an actress, and that picture is somewhere online where it's the four of us and her, taking a picture, at the Costco. So I walk back to Stevie, and he's like, You did good,
right.
I'm like, whatever, man, and then Frank and Gandolfini just carry on their conversation. But in the actual scene, they cut that part out, which I was a little disappointed because it was so funny. It was such a good, funny moment,
Yeah.
So that was definitely one good moment. And then with the hair thing, so before I had to go in for the first episode, I get a call from the HM, hair and makeup people, and they're like, "So we need to set an appointment for you to get your hair done." So I'm like, "My hair done?" She's like, "Yeah, you're gonna have blonde hair." I'm like, "So they're really gonna dye my hair blonde?" She's like, "Absolutely." So they gave me an address to go to, this woman's house who did a lot of the hair for them. I go to the house. And she's putting these foils in, I think you've had blonde highlights.
Oh, yes, I have.
What that's like. But I'm like, this is what I see, a lot of women go through and stuff like that.
Right.
I'm sitting here foiling my hair, and I'm looking at the mirror, and she's laughing, and I'm laughing. I'm like, what is going on here, The only upside about that was they had to give me a day's pay to go get that done. So every time I did an episode, which it took two and a half weeks to shoot, they would have to touch up my roots.
Right.
So I would have to go back in. So I knew within that month or whatever, I knew I was going to be getting another 2 days worth of
make more money. Right.
So that was the whole blonde thing, which I didn't think they were going to do. The only pushback that I was trying to give them was I liked having the darker eyebrows. When you lighten your eyebrows up, it really changes the expression and the look in your eyes.
Right.
And I have very intense eyes, so that I would always fight them on pulling it out sooner than later because I didn't want the light eyebrows, So that was my own beef with that.
No, but I actually, you pulled off blonde hair. It was actually,
it wasn't
surprisingly enough. Yeah. I thought it looked good.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. You know?
There's no mistaking you're Italian and Sicilian. You know, you're dark.
Right.
But it actually looked good. I you know, when I first heard you were going to look blonde, I was like, this will be a little awkward.
Yeah.
But I thought it looked great. I did. Right. I really did.
And then they did eventually, they said, okay, we're going to put your hair back to dark. And I was very happy about that. So the reason behind that was, that was the time that we were getting ready to kill Vita for being gay. So the subplot to that was, you know, I guess the blonde hair, whatever, they didn't want me, you know, my character didn't want anybody to think, oh, you know, I got blonde hair, maybe I'm a little bit on that side too. So
right.
I'm going to darken my hair up and toughen myself up. And the first time you see me with dark hair, I did have a nice bit of dialogue with Gandolfini. When I walk into the meeting, that was the meeting of Little Carmine organized it. It was me, Frank Vincent, guy who played Butchie, Gandolfini, and Silvio, Stevie Van Sant. And I walk in and Gandolfini looks at me. He's like, what happened to the blonde hair? And I said, I didn't really elaborate too much. I just felt like going back to my normal roots again here. And he goes, looks good, you know? So that was another part of the scene that they cut. And I felt that was so important because now you're looking at me sitting there and it's like, is that the same guy? There was never any explanation about why my hair was dark.
Right.
And all of a sudden. So some people may have gotten confused with that. Again, I understand it's not just about me and my character, but it was just a little something that kind of, you know, showed what happened with that. And I thought that was a point that they probably could have left, but, you know, he never liked to finish too many things with the guy. Same thing with the guy in the woods. And, you know, David had a tendency of not really finishing off every little thing with a nice, neat, you know, bow tie, so to speak. He didn't have to explain everything. And that's just who he was, you know.
So, all right, so now, you know, everything's humming.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, now you kind of, you know, enthralled into this series. You know, you're doing it, you're living it. When do you find out that they're going to kill you off? And how does that whole thing hit you? And
right.
All of a sudden, is that it has to be super disappointing. You didn't have any idea, right? You found out at the table read, or... did you know this was happening?
Well, the first time I didn't have any idea. So let me elaborate on that.
Sure.
I get part of the script for the second episode that I'm doing. This is only the second episode that I'm doing. I get part of the script and I go to the, I get up to Studio Silver Cup and Al Lena is standing there. And I'm like, Al, you know, you know Al Lena, don't you, Steve?
Yeah, I know him. I know him. I don't know him well.
Right. He's another Brooklyn guy. So he says to me, he goes, I'm finally getting on the show. And I'm like, congratulations. That's awesome. He goes, yeah, I get to kill this guy, Jerry.
Oh, no.
So I'm like, did you just say you get to kill Jerry? Now, you know that there's never any people with the same name on an episode.
Right.
So I'm like, he goes, yeah. I go, I'm Jerry.
That sucks.
I'm like, you gotta be effing kidding me. So I get up to the table read and they're all sitting there and James, you know, Gandolfini comes over to me, goes, listen, you know, it is what it is. You had a good run. In my head, I'm saying a good run. This is going to be my second episode and I'm dying on the show. He goes, yeah, listen, you know, sometimes that's the way the cookie crumbles and I appreciate you. I was so upset. I sat down at the table, obviously. David Chase, you know, just looked at me and he just kind of nodded, you know. And I'm like, you know, whatever, thank you. You know, I appreciate it. So we go through the table read and I'm with Lou Martini in the car. And we pull over to this, we pull into this like junkyard and then a car rolls up on us and like unloads like a barrage of bullets. Where Lou's ducking out of the way, and I'm getting riddled like Sonny at the crosswalk.
Right.
We shoot this whole scene this one day. Probably cost them $300,000-$400,000 for the day, I would say. I'm dead. I say goodbye to everybody. Mind you, this is the second episode that I'm in. I pack my stuff. My manager's like, you know, what are you going to do, John? Listen, it is what it is, blah, blah, blah.
It's like you really died, right?
I was oh my God. I was so like, I mean, 4 years to get on the show, second episode in, I'm getting killed. I'm like, you got to be kidding me, man. You know, so you can't help but have that knot in your stomach. So whatever, I go home, whatever, I get on my life, week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks goes by. My phone rings, my agent. She's like, John. I'm like, yeah. She's like, you're not going to believe this. I'm like, what now? She's like, no. The Sopranos called me back. David Chase is not going to air that scene, and he wants to keep you on as a recurring character. So I was like, again, is this a pinch me moment?
Right.
Is this real? Do I have a contract? She goes, John, I have the contract right here. They're just waiting for you to sign it. I'm like, oh my God.
Right.
I'm back. I mean, how many people get killed off on a show? And then the beauty was it, because again, we were on that 2 year hiatus. So we didn't air the first episode until months after we shot.
Right.
Like movie, you know. So if it would have been like regular TV where you shoot something, that's on in 2 weeks.
Right.
So this was because they were on that long hiatus, there was that long break. So I come back and I get the new script and I'm up at the table read, and Gandolfini is shaking his head. He's like, you survived. He goes, one other person survived that. Like where they made him like the twin brother.
Right.
Which is what's his name? Dan Grimaldi.
Right.
His character was killed off and then he came on as his twin brother.
Right.
So I was the second person on that show to be killed off and then for them not to air that. And I had new life and I continued to do season 6, part 2. In total, I did 10 episodes on that amazing show. And it was great. So then fast forward to when I'm getting killed for real, that everybody's seen the table. Frank Vincent was in negotiations for a contract and they came to me and they said, if we don't work this out, guess who's going to be the new boss of the New York crime family? I was like, don't fuck with me. You, Jerry Torchiano, will be the new boss of the New York crime family. Because Johnny Sack died of cancer and I was next. I was Phil's protege. So again, here I am going, don't work out the contract. Don't work out the contract.
Right.
In the 23rd hour, he works out the contract. And they said, we have good news and bad news. The good news is that you have one of the most amazing death scenes that we're going to be shooting, and this time it'll stick. The bad news is that you're not going to be the new boss. So they had this character, Doc, put a hit on me so that they could then shoot him, kill him, and then Frank just comes in and he stays, because he was going to step down. His character, he didn't want it anymore. And all this other stuff, but that was all because he was in negotiations with a contract or something like that. So it was an amazing moment. And it's funny because just today I looked up because I'm 90% sure I was like, I forgot where they killed me, but I always thought it was Bamonte's in Williamsburg. And sure enough, when I Google it, where does Jerry Torchiano get whacked? What restaurant? And it says, you know, Bamonte's in Williamsburg, New York. It was the setting for several episodes of The Sopranos, where character Jerry Torchiano was murdered there.
That's funny.
Right there in the Google Wikipedia.
That's great.
You know, it was a great death scene, the way it was shot, slow motion, the whole thing. I went out with a big bang, no pun intended. Actually, pun is intended.
To this day, one of the most famous, if not the most famous kill scene in The Sopranos.
On the show, yeah. I was very happy about
that. Yeah, I mean, so again, if you're going to get killed, that was the way to go out. You know,
yes.
So
yeah,
who's the most humble on The Sopranos? Humble behind the scenes.
Well, I'm going to say Stevie Van Zandt. Edie is also great. Edie was very nice. I seen her, and I never got to work with her, but we were in the makeup room quite a lot, and she was always very nice. And obviously Gandolfini too.
So. Take away James Gandolfini out of it. Who was the most talented actor you worked across from in The Sopranos?
Aside from Jim,
yeah.
Michael Imperioli.
Michael Imperioli?
Yeah.
I could see that. I knew you were going to say. For some reason, I'm knowing everything I'm asking you. For some reason,
yeah, no, that Michael's nothing. You know, people don't realize Michael is very like shy and humble.
Right.
So when you see him on that show, he is nothing like that.
Right. Right.
You would think that he almost is.
Right.
But when you meet him, he's nothing like that. He's a very nice guy.
Your favorite scene on the Sopranos that you shot?
Probably my death scene, unfortunately. Yeah, I got to really, you know, beef it up with Silvio, and he made me laugh. He's like, make sure none of that blood gets into my hair or on my face, that splatter. I go, what are you talking about? I'm pointing all these squibs straight at you guys. If I go down, you're going down.
That's great. Again, you mentioned the table read. What other table read was your, like, I made a moment on the show? Well, like, what was the first time you're on set or whatever, what was this, you mm-hmm. know? What was that like? The first time you go to set, you know, go to one action. What was the first like? Oh my God!
I'm gonna say meeting Gandolfini in the Bada Bing. Okay, was pretty incredible because it was when my character was introduced. I get to shake hands with the icon, so that was a very powerful moment. And then when Frank. Later on in episodes when my hair was dark, when Frank was coming back from recovery of the heart attack and we were breaking his chops and we're kidding around with him and they said, you know, yeah, they say you look like the Shah of Iran. And he's like, who does? Tony does, you know? So it was a nice little moment with him. It's amazing because, you know, I mean, he's gone. And you know, people in that room right there, the guy to play Greg is gone.
Tarico.
It's unbelievable, you know.
Yeah.
Chach. I was in the scene with Chach. We were all there and they're all gone, you know. Yeah. So it's sad. But that's a moment that'll stick out as well, you know, for me.
Oh, and in closing, since that's what the last show was, like when 2000.
I'm gonna say it's 2007.
Seven. So,
yeah,
John Bianco in 2023, right now as we speak. Mm-hmm. When you look back, what is your just, you know, your overall thought about the whole thing? Is it the best thing you ever did? I know. I mean, again, you've done a lot of other big shows, but is that, if you had to put a cherry on top of what you've done, it's The Sopranos.
Yeah. I mean, without a doubt, that show, you know, launched my career. It's done so many positive things for me in so many different ways. I'm recognized, you know, quite often. It still shocks me. I'm still, you know, humbled by that people recognize me and know me and repeat some of my lines. Was this fucking waiter on sabbatical? You know, I get a lot of repeated lines, you know, and it's great. It's a great feeling. And it's all because of that show. So that's definitely, so far, the highlight of my career. And, you know, I don't know if that's ever going to, if anything's going to top that.
And what would you like to tell any of the listeners that are listening, you know, listen to this podcast that are interested in, you know, either pursuing a career in film, filmmaking, directing, acting, what would you leave and what would your words of wisdom be?
I would say don't do it.
I would say the road
is paved with a lot of heartbreak and a lot of, you need really tough skin. And that's why so many people don't make it, because it's grueling. But I mean, that aside, I mean, if you have a dream, if you have a passion, you have to follow it. You have to exhaust that until the wheels fall off. Because if you don't, you're always going to second guess everything you do, and that's not something that you want to go down with. So I would say follow your dreams, work hard at it, and see where it leads.
Whatever it is, John Bianco, it's on. You know, thank you for coming on Screw the Cloud. You've definitely screwed the cloud a lot in your lifetime. It's my lifetime with you. It's been an absolute pleasure. You know, I can't wait for this episode to air. I mean, there are so many Soprano fans, and I think you gave us some cool insights on what it was like that, you know, most people wouldn't know. So I'd like to thank you. Continued success, and we'll be together real soon.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Love being on the show. And anytime you want me back, I'm here.
Thank you for listening to Screw the Clout. Join us next week for our next amazing guest.